Mr. Alfred Loft, Social Studies Instructor from 1954 to 1956.
Came to the Victoria Normal School in 1954 from teaching high school in Rosslyn, B.C. And I was an instructor in social studies until 1956 when the Normal School and Old Vic College amalgamated. And the Normal School became the Faculty of Education under Vic College. This would be in 1956-57. And I then became an assistant professor of education. Now, you asked a moment ago about the attitude of the students. I found the attitude of the students to be excellent. As a matter of fact, I feel that there was something lost when the Normal School was dispensed with, because with the Normal School, all of the students had a unity of purpose. They were all there for the same reason. And what I noticed as time went on in the Faculty of Education, they more or less dispersed. In other words, some were taking English, some were taking biology, some were taking Lord knows what, and they just lost, or the Normal School atmosphere lost its cohesiveness. This was my impression. And of course the idea was that those young people in the Normal School would get a little more culture by rubbing arms with arts and science people, which, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of baloney. In any case, that's my attitude toward the students. I thought they were just tremendous, and I want to repeat, they had a unity of purpose. We had a tremendous amount of fun with, annual picnics, get-togethers. And what was very valuable in the Normal School was lost in the Faculty of Education was, during normal school days, every weekend, one room would be responsible for putting on a program that lasted at least an hour. And some of these young people, had never before been in front of a group of people. And this was very important for them when they were to go out into the country or wherever they were to go, to meet people and to talk to parents. They were petrified at first, but in speaking to a number of them later, they felt that was one of the big benefits of the normal school days. These annual, or these weekly concerts. Sort of comparable to my day when the teacher would have to put on the Christmas concert, and all the youngsters would have to participate, the same sort of idea. And some real talent was exhibited. I can tell you, I really enjoyed those weekly, as we call them, auditoriums. And every morning, there were opening exercises in which the students took part. And this forced them to get up on the stage and face 500 people, which, isn't easy. Some of these people may be from Skookumchuck. You don't get that opportunity very often, do you, to meet 500 people. But they all rose to the occasion. So we lost that when we became a Faculty of Education. And this is heresy, but I've always maintained that as far as education of teachers is concerned, if they went ahead and got their basic degree first and took 1 year of teacher training, that would be superior to what they have been doing in the past. I mean, this is my view, because just face it, the year at normal middle school was the bread and butter year. We didn't pretend to be academic. And for that reason, education students, even today, are still, I think, looked down upon by faculty of arts and science people. Because you simply cannot compare an arts course with an education course. You know, methods in the teaching of English, methods in the teaching of history. It hasn't got the academic content that a history course would have. Do you follow me? I try to teach you how to teach. That's what I tried to do when I was a social studies instructor. When I became a professor of history, it was much easier for me. I just taught you history. And there's quite a difference. So for that reason, the courses taken in education suffer by comparison. And I hate to say it, but education students more or less looked down upon as taking Mickey Mouse courses. Now, is there any other direction you want me to go? Normal school students were in one part of the building, and the arts and science students were in another part, but I, as an instructor in the normal school, I could find no evidence of any friction between the two groups. I just didn't see any. And certainly, as far as I'm concerned, the normal school teachers and the people in the Faculty of Arts and Science got along very well. So I saw, from my point, I saw no friction at all. But I would imagine there was friction among the those at the top, like perhaps the principal of either college, because of the problem of space. You know, jockeying for space. This is a period when I was there, we had over, I think it was over, well, I can't remember the number, quite a number. We were full, in any case. And they were the days when you could come with grade 12, junior trick. And at a time, too, when arts and science was beginning to increase in number, and the situation was getting pretty dicey. Until that other building, what's that building? That school board office? What for obviously?
There's the Ewing Building and the Paul Building.
The Young Building is the old building. Yeah. Well, it's the Paul Building was built, and the Ewing Building was, of course, the Ewing Building was there when I was there. And we had a broken down old cafe operated by a very kind lady. Mrs. Norris was her name. When she was there, I don't know, she was there for years. And matter of fact, she was there right up until the time the campus moved up to the present one. And that was a great place for congregating various students, various faculties. And the normal school used to get together over tea, coffee, or whatever. And so did the instructors in both groups. And I found that very enjoyable. It was certainly a beaten-up cafeteria, but she did the best she could with what she had. It was one of those little huts, still there, I think. Do you use it for as a cafeteria? Well, you know what I mean. I don't know. No, I can't think of anything else at the moment. Any other questions?
Anything about the lawns and the gardens?
They were beautiful. As a matter of fact, I think they've gone back. It doesn't look as attractive to me as it used to when I first went there. I don't know what's happened.
They probably don't have as many gardeners.
That could be, but that is one beautiful place. That old building is just beautiful. And as I say, it certainly doesn't have the beautiful manicured look it had when I went there in 1954. No mistake about it.
Well, the age of the students, were they fairly young when they came to the normal school when you taught?
most part, oh yes, quite young. And but I also taught students there who were older than I was. People who had made a career in the Northwest Mounted, or in the Northwest, in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and retired. You know, you were talking about 45, and go start a new career. In retired Navy people, and vets who had decided after a while they would like to become teachers. But for the most part, you know, they were young people. And incidentally, there was an unwritten law that all those students east of Hope and north of Hope, that is, means the interior, would come to UVic, or to Provincial Normal School here, whereas Vancouver would look after all the lower mainland. You know, you could go to either place, but that seemed to be the pattern. So we had them, of course, all the way from the Peace River District to Fernie. Caribou, all those people would come to us. And it was rather enjoyable going out to see them during the practice teaching time. You know, you got to see all parts of BC.
You had to check on them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we went out every spring. They'd do their first practice teaching in the schools in the area, and then the last, when would it be? Around May, is it April or May? I forget now. They would go out for, 3 weeks and do their final practice teaching in their own areas, if there was a position available. And we would go out to watch them. And, but in those days, they would have to come back. So they'd finish their final practice teaching, and then they'd have to come back, and we'd go on into June, whereas the others were long gone, people in arts and science in the big college. They had the regular university academic year, but we had to go right into June. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'd almost forgotten that. Anything else? And that wasn't very popular as far as the students were concerned. And I thought it was rather dumb anyway, having to come back after their... We taught them all we could teach them.
What did they have to do once they came back?
Oh, we just continued with our courses. And but after that 3 week practicum, as far as I was concerned, they should have... stayed home. They had to go to the expense of coming all the way back to Victoria and then leaving again in about a month's time. It just, as I say, I can't remember if it was April or May. It didn't make any sense to me when I didn't run things. And the students, I would say, resented this. Besides, it was expensive. And they'd ask me, why do we have to come back? I simply had to answer, I didn't know. But we were under the provincial Department of Education, and the schools, I guess, ran 10 months, and you're going to run 10 months. So that was that.
No, it was the provincial, or the department that decided that normal school should be done away with, then, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Education's completely in the hands, and still is, of the department, or ministry they call it now, of education.
That's too bad.
Well, of course, that's under the British North America Act. Education is always in the hands of, even now, the university trains the teachers, but the ministry gives them their certificate. So it's always the Ministry of Education in control, which is as it should be.
Can you remember all the different courses that the students had to take in their year up there?
Well, I'll see how many I can remember. You had to take methods in teaching primary. That was a special course. Social studies. methods in teaching English, methods in teaching mathematics, methods in teaching physical education, methods in teaching science. Dr. Gaddis taught psychology. There was a course given in, I don't know whether I have the right title, sort of business management, how to keep your school records and things of that sort, and also we test them in law, education, the school act. They had to be quite conversant with the school act, and they were tested on this. I think that's about it.
Do they have music still?
Oh, of course, music. Yes, music played a big role. Yes.
Who was the music teacher at that time? Do you remember?
Who was the music teacher? Oh, Mr. Boyce Gaddis. Mr. Boyce Gaddis, and it was his brother, a twin, who taught in the college as a psychologist. Writing. Writing was taught. You know the old McLean method of handwriting? I never taught that, thank goodness. How could I forget music? Now that's what was taught. I think I covered it all now.
Holmeck, were they taught to fend for themselves? At one point, some of the boys were taught to how to make a simple stew or biscuits, just in case they had to go out somewhere on their own.
Not when I was there. We had no facilities for Holmeck there at all.
They weren't at that
point. No. But I recall going to normal school myself in Saskatchewan, and I certainly had to, you know, they make fun of course in basket weaving. Well, I had to weave baskets at the normal school in Regina. So, but we didn't do that here. I guess they called it manual arts or something like that. I don't know. What else was there?
What kind of sports did they have?
Pardon?
What sports were popular?
Oh, the regular track and field, because remember, when you get out into the country or into your school, you had to probably have knowledge to operate a track meet. And you also probably had to be the coach. So you had to know something about all these various kinds of sport. And just the regular, like hockey and, here they have field hockey and basketball, track, you know, the regular thing.
Where did they do all their sports? Outdoor sports?
Outdoor sports? A lot of it was done on the corner of that open space on the corner of Fall Bay Road and
Lansdowne.
You know, that open area. Softball games.
Was the track built yet down where Lansdowne Junior High is?
No. Not that I can remember. Well, 54, I can't remember when Lansdowne High School was built. I shouldn't say no, but I don't know. I just don't know. So I think I have all the courses that were taken at that time. You forget so soon, you know. That's not that many years ago. Is it? Oh, I can recall first hearing about it. The Deputy Minister of Education came and held a joint meeting in the old Ewing Building, used to be the library, informing us, this was what, in 56, 57, the two groups would be combined and the members of the normal school staff would become members of a faculty of education. I can recall that very, very clearly. And of course, people wondered what their future was going to be, and then wondered, well, I wonder when I'm going to be an instructor, an assistant professor, an associate professor, because all this had to come under sort of a university style of organization.
Was this rumored that it was going to happen?
Yes, there'd been, but that rumor had been going on for quite some time. And, you know, after a while you just forget the rumor and think, well, it's coming, but nobody seemed to be aware of it. Ray Williston was the Minister of Education at that time, and Harold Campbell was the Deputy Minister who came and told us what was going to happen. And as far as the transition was concerned, we still taught our same courses. We were given different titles. And later on, the Paul Building was built, took the pressure off. And that was really an office building, though, the Paul Building. So I can't think of anything unusual about the transition. It was very simple, very easy.
Were there new courses introduced in the education faculty once at normal school had been dropped?
No, not that I can recall, because you still had to have methods in music, methods in art. I forgot art. And we had a very good art teacher, Mr. Wolf Johns. Oh, how can I forget art? And I still carried on with my methods in teaching social studies and geography. It was just not that different. Except what happened when we united our weekly concerts went out the window. That was a great loss. And also our morning exercises, they went out the window, which was another great loss in my view.
Who was the principal while you were in the provincial normal school?
The principal was Harry Gilliland. Mm-hmm. Harry Gilliland. I was going to say something, I can't recall. No, it's gone. Can't remember. Anything else?
What kind of principal was he? Some of the very early principals had, rule with an iron hand and everything was just so. I was just wondering how.
Harry Gilliland was much like that. You know, the old style administrator, the old style principal. I would say, to be perfectly honest, was quite inflexible. Quite inflexible at times. Well, most of the time. And I had never been the former principal. I hear it was rather the same, although I just heard, and I was H.O. English. So, and Harry Gilliland carried on the tradition.
I suspect then that the students were treated very formally, were they?
Yes.
Mr. and Miss.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. You mean when an instructor was addressing? Well, the attitude being this, that after all, they were young men and women, and they were to be treated with respect, and they should expect respect from their students. And I'm all for that, too. You know. That makes sense, because when you go out into a school, you're suddenly a very important individual in the community. Because I'm a firm believer in this, that no student would ever call me Alf, ever. And you've got to have a line somewhere between the student and the teacher. And this horrifies me. some of the schools that I hear about, where students call their teachers by their first name, you know. I'd kill them. But that's one of the reasons for the discipline problem. You cannot have a youngster calling you by your first name. No way. That's got nothing to do with the rules.
Do you remember any of the rules that stood up at the normal schools? You know, they were unwritten, but things like the proper dress and...
Oh, yes, you're expected to go there with a certain tie, as you would dress when you entered a classroom. Now, good heavens, although thank goodness things are improving, they're starting to swing back. But some of the slobs in the 60s and early 70s just made me ill. You know, I could never get over that. And I used to, even at the university, I used to just nail them when they came into my class like that. Remember one kid? This is an example. He came in with long, ungainly hair. This is at the start of all his hairy business, you know, and I took off after him. This is not a normal school, this is the university. And the next time he appeared in the class, he shaved his head like a billiard ball. Oh, I think we'd have failed him in the 54 in the normal school. I'm sure they'd never have got a teaching certificate dressed the way some of them dressed. No. Not old. At least, so does that answer your question about dress? And no sports. They couldn't participate in any sporting activities on Sundays. No way.
Were there classes held on Saturday up there?
Yes, kind of. Yes. 6 days, well, that went on up until middle 60s.
Didn't realize.
Yes.
So they were really totally immersed in their program.
Oh, yes. And all the dances, there had to be sponsors. One of us had to be there to see the no hanky-panky. And had some very good dances.
Did they have many during the year?
They'd have maybe three or four. And we'd have early in September when they all arrived, we'd have a big picnic at Willow's Beach, sort of a get-together, so everyone would learn a little about everyone else, and that was fun, too. We had a lot of fun in the normal school days, and this unity disappeared once it became the Faculty of Education. That's my view.
Was there a wind-up picnic also, or was it just in the beginning of the year they had that?
I think we did have a wind-up picnic. Gosh, you forget so soon. I think we did. This would be in June. And I don't know whether it's true now or not, but in those days, all of us became, for a week at least, a justice of the peace, so that we could administer oaths. I don't know now whether or not this is true, but no teacher went out into the field without taking the oath of allegiance. So they were Canadian citizens. Immediately they did that. Now, I don't know what the situation is now. Another thing we did, but we didn't do that at least I can't remember doing, the Faculty of Education, in June, or May, when they came back, they'd start looking for jobs, and then we would assist them in writing out their applications. And some of them had no idea at all how to apply for a job. And I thought this was a very beneficial exercise.
I guess this would be the first job that...
Oh, the first job, practically all of them ever had. And, you know, there's a knack in writing out an application.
Definitely.
So they, I know they'd bring them to me, I'd read it, and give them suggestions, and toss it back, and come back again, and, you know, until it satisfied me. Some of them were just hopeless, you know, in their applications, just no idea. But that was another thing that was lost. It seems to me there are Americans, any number of Americans up here teaching in our schools, are there not? Have you heard?
Mm-hmm. There's still quite a few.
Well, of course, once they declared oath of allegiance, they're finished as far as being an American citizen are concerned. But there must have been American students here, and I don't know how. And there must have been some way around it for them, but I don't know. We'd have to get that information from someone else.
You don't remember the last class that went through the normal school, approximately how many there were?
No, sure. 324.
324?
Yep. That's 324. You're numbered in there.
Did you help students make their annual each year? Was that done entirely on their own?
Oh, they did that. They'd have a faculty advisor, I don't know who it was. I never performed as a faculty advisor for yearbook at all. And different faculty members or normal school instructors sponsor different sports. I sponsored, for example, badminton and curling. And others would sponsor, you know, basketball.
Where did you have your curling?
Down in the Victoria Curling Club by the Memorial Arena.
It was pretty new then, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
I see a picture in the annual here. A tug of war, it looks like it.
Oh, that was an annual thing. That should be at Willows Beach.
Teachers versus the students?
Yeah, well.
I suppose all the students had to participate in at least one sport, didn't they?
Yes. I mean, phys ed was mandatory. As a matter of fact, when we first went up there, or when I first arrived here, phys ed was mandatory, and I think it was first and second year at Victoria College.
Mm-hmm. And the graduation dance, the last year was in the Crystal Ballroom at the Empress.
When? What is the date there? The month?
Doesn't say. The final dance is all it has.
You've seen that book before, so have you? Schools have parents' days where you go over, you know, you follow your child's timetable and see the various teachers. I know at Oak Bay Junior High, I followed my daughter's timetable, and I taught every one of her teachers, every last one of them. Wasn't it fantastic? They'd come in there and nearly die when they see me. that's one of the great rewards of teaching, meeting your former students.
Know what they're doing.
Oh, yes, it's great. It really is, no matter where you go, anywhere in B.C. I went up to Smithers, my daughter's married and was living up there. Went up there for Christmas. Went to church, Christmas morning. Two young women came up to me, "Do you remember me?" I didn't remember. They were students in Norman School, living in Smithers. They remembered me. Now that makes life worthwhile.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you a Victorian girl?
Yes.
They probably learned more by copying. I mean, if you were a good teacher, you know, the children will copy you, or your students will copy you unconsciously. You know, they don't, of course, what I used to tell them, just steal every possible idea you can, which I think is very good advice. And, you know, Because as I also used to tell them, to be a good teacher, you've got to be a combination of Bob Hope, Albert Einstein, and the Holy Ghost. And I mean that. If you're really going to be good. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
You look back in your career in school. There's some who stand out and they're modeling themselves on someone. So that's what I thought of my normal school days, in any case, that was most worthwhile. I don't know of a happy year I ever had when I went to normal school. And another thing I think we used to do, I think we tried to make these people from the interior of the province welcome. You know, at least I wasn't concerned about the local people, because a number of students would arrive, say, from Hope Bay High or Mountain View, and they had a little in-group, but how about these kids who came from Terrace, you know, or Fernie or Sparwood? I mean, it's pretty lonesome. You can well imagine, by Christmas, there are a lot of tears being shed, and I could understand that, too, and I think we did our best to make them, you know, feel they weren't alone. And that's another good aspect. But it's less personal, I found, in the faculty of education. Now, I don't know why. I mean, it shouldn't be. But to me, it was less personal.
When these students came down from the interior and far-reaching places, was there housing available for them? You had a list where they could board?
There was a list, yes. I think, if I recall, Margie Hoy had a permanent list of people who made it a practice of renting rooms to students. And, of course, naturally, at times there was quite a problem, depending on the number of students coming down. But everything seemed to go along well enough.
I think maybe it brought everybody closer together, having these people from out of town to...
Certainly the city students must have learned a great deal about the interior, from my hand. What's he going to say? I can recall parents coming down with their student, with their children, you know, looking for homes in which to stay. It's only natural parent would like to see where the youngster's going to live. I can recall them doing that. And so as time goes on, you think of, you know, little details. Can't think of anything else, really.
Can you remember, in the Young building itself, where some of the rooms were? It's being changed so drastically in the past little while. Like, the library is where the auditorium used to be.
Yeah.
The principal's office at one time had a fireplace in it, I understand.
Oh, my office had a fireplace in it. Oh, a number of the offices. Oh, sure, that's nothing unusual.
Yeah, they're abolished now.
Is that right? Well, they were just closed off. Oh, gorgeous building. Sure. Where is the library? That's when it was the college, mm-hmm. Yeah. Where's... the library. You know where that was, do you?
No.
Here's the yellow lamp. Yeah, that's the basement curriculum library.
Oh, it was downstairs.
It was a curriculum library downstairs, yeah.
Was it close to the gym?
Just a minute. I think it was sort of across. It's down in the basement down here.
Well, that's where the library was, under the front stairs almost.
Yeah, down in here. And the light that they have windows at land level.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where it was.
And then the gym would be directly across from the
Yes,
campus.
Something very close.
In the original blueprints, that area was put aside for the lunchroom.
Where the curriculum library was?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there? You notice it says library Ewing building. Well, that was the arts and science library. Mm. Where that's the curriculum library.
That's when the college was in.
See, they've got libraries separated at the University of Victoria, too. There's a curriculum library in the main library.
There. Was the Dunlop House used for anything, or was it a residence still at that time for the principal or anybody?
When I went there in 1954, I can't remember whether it was or not. But certainly, I can distinctly remember shortly after. Shortly after it was used as lecture rooms.
That's what it's used for.
Yeah, by late 50s, early 60s, it was certainly used for lecture rooms. One use, and offices later on. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember in 1954 whether people still live there or not. Quite an old building.
Yes.
Quite isolated now, isn't it? Sitting up there. I wonder what they're going to do with it.
In the 30s, one of the students at that time I had spoken to, he told me that if your teachers didn't think you were teacher material, they told you right in the beginning so that you didn't waste their time or your own. Did you find this when you were teaching? That if there was some student who didn't seem to really fit in, that they were notified in some way that maybe they should seek another profession?
Oh, isn't it nice? We have to tell you an anecdote about that. I went into school, watched this young girl teach, and she was terrible. So we went in pairs. Instructors went in pairs. So I said, I'm not going to tell you anything about this student. You go in. You watch. So he went in. He was. Oh, it was just awful. And he said to him in a nice way afterwards, did you ever think of nursing for a career? That's one way. Oh, yeah, there were students who were told that they may as well go home. They usually give them until Christmas because they just couldn't stand it. I can recall another incident. One chap, quite athletic type, big boy. I went to watch him teach, and he just broke down and cried. So he obviously was out. You know, just couldn't stand the pressure. And, oh yes, I've told him. You know, in a nice way, because everyone can't be a teacher.
Majority of them got through.
The majority got through, yes. And sometimes some got through, I wondered about. But don't forget, in those days, there was a great shortage of teachers, let me tell you. And it was absolutely necessary to have somebody in these little schools with some sort of training, rather than have no one. So it seems to me that some of the standards were quite lax at that time when there was a great shortage of teachers. It's like everything else. When you've got lots of students, suddenly the standards go up. And you haven't got enough. Standards are lowered. But that was the argument. Because at the time, Alberta was very short of teachers. And the government there was threatening to give them crash courses for like 4 months and send them out and they can come back. And we were afraid that that was going to happen here. So there were times, I would say, that some passed who shouldn't have passed. Of course, that's true in every course. But due, I repeat, to the great shortage of teachers in 54 or 55. Because, let's see, that's about 10 years after the war. And a great big population explosion, you know, after the veterans came home. And so we needed teachers, or the government needed teachers. So we churned them out. I suppose, as years went on, a lot of them would just weed themselves out. But unfortunately, some who should have weeded themselves out are still teaching, unfortunately. And broken down, see, not too large, because I'd have maybe not one section, but four different sections taught at different times during the day. Otherwise you have too many in the room. And maybe, well, there was 300 odd students. There were two of us taught social studies. Neil Swainson, he's a professor of political science, and myself. So divide that, that would be 160 students each. We were very flexible. I taught methods and mathematics for a short time. And I think Neil taught some English, I'm not sure. But Neil moved over into... That's what happened to some of us. As time went on, we moved from education into the Faculty of Arts and Science. Well, let's see who... I guess it was just Neil Swainson and myself who did that. I can't remember who else. Going into arts and science. The rest stayed in the Faculty of Education.